This is Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Heard around the world online at equestrianlegacy.net.
I am so glad our trails have crossed. Oh, the joy you bring to me. And as I look upon each face, such kindness there I see. I wish for you the love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Now go their separate ways, and life goes rolling on. I hope our trails will cross again before God takes us home. We share the wondrous love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Yes, as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Blessed trails.
Well, welcome to Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale, where we feature gospel, inspirational, and patriotic music with a definite Western flair. I am delighted you're able to join us. We have a great show today with a little different twist, featuring the music of an icon in gospel music. So let's get right into that first song.
Open up your heart and let the sun shine in.
Mother told me something that all of us should know. It's all about the devil, and I've learned to hate him so. She said he causes trouble when you let him in the room. He will never, ever leave you if your heart is filled with gloom.
So let the sun shine in, face it with a grin. Smilers never lose, and frowners never win. So let the sun shine in, face it with a grin. Open up your heart and let the sun shine in.
Now when you are unhappy, that old devil wears a grin. Oh, but he feels so awful, awful when the light comes pouring in. I know he'll be unhappy, 'cause I'll never wear a frown. Maybe if we keep on smiling, he'll get tired of hanging around.
So let the sun shine in, face it with a grin. Smilers never lose, and frowners never win. So let the sun shine in, face it with a grin. Open up your heart and let the sun shine in.
Forget to say my prayers, and that devil jumps with glee. But he feels so awful, awful when he sees me on my knee. So if you're full of trouble and you never seem to win, man, just open up your heart, boy, and let the sun shine in.
So let the sun shine in, face it with a grin.
Smilers never lose, oh no, and frowners never win.
So let the sun shine in, face it with a grin. Open up your heart and let the sun shine in.
makes me smile. Today we have the wonderful pleasure of featuring the music of not only an icon in gospel music, but a true legend as well, Stuart Hamblin. And joining us today to help us get to know this legend a little better is the CEO of Hamblin Music and Stuart's grandson, Bill Lindsay. Welcome, Bill.
Well, thank you, Belinda. Thank you for having me on the show. This is great.
I'm excited. I tell you what, when you sent me all the information to prep for the show, I was like, man, we have like three shows worth of stuff here. So it's we're definitely going to have to, you know, get through what we can get through today and have you back on to cover some more because, I mean, wow, what an amazing life your grandfather had. And you know what I love about this little song? It's so sweet and uplifting, and I love that, you know, the juxtapose of son, S-U-N, or son, S-O-N. I love when songs do that. And so it was just, seems like a simple little song, but, boy, there was a lot in there that I just loved,
yeah.
Which was probably pretty typical of your grandfather's writing, I think.
Yeah, there is a lot in that particular song. It's a lot of fun. So, and a little tidbit, it actually was used in 1964 on the Flintstones. So for opening and closing the final season of the Flintstones.
The Flintstones.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Oh,
no.
That's cute. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, so many things. So now, Bill, before we get into your grandfather, let's just get a little bit more information about you. You are presently the CEO of Hamblin Music, or the publishing company for all of your grandfather's work, right?
That's correct, yes. That's what I go out and am talking to people all the time about his music and the songs he wrote. People don't realize all the songs he wrote and just what an impact they have on just the whole industry, the whole gospel industry. So yeah, I get to have a little bit of fun in my job. I get to go on and talk to people like yourself, Belinda. I have a good time talking to different artists and having fun and telling Stuart Hamblin stories is what I have a fun time doing too.
Yes, wonderful, wonderful stories, and I have the good fortune and pleasure to be actually signed, if you will, with Hamblin Music, and you helped me get my music out there. And so just such a pleasure and an honor to be associated with such a great man and a great company. So thank you so much for that. And
thank you.
It's so fun. And one of the things that was really cool that I did not realize until you sent me this information was that your grandfather was actually the first singing cowboy on radio. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, in 1926, he actually had two radio shows in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and one was in Dallas on WFAA, and then the other one was on WBAP over in Fort Worth. And he would do a half-hour show and then drive as quick as he could over to the other show and do the show there. And he was Cowboy Joe on the radio. He was the first singing cowboy on radio, and that was his little stint that he would do.
Wow.
And it was a lot of fun.
And then he had, I guess. And you said, Joe, why didn't he, I guess Cowboy Stewart wouldn't really get it, would it?
Yeah, Cowboy Joe was kind of generic. And actually during the radio show, when he was doing the radio show, he actually entered an amateur contest in, I think it was Dallas. And the end result was he won. And the master of ceremonies, which was Havin McCreary, came over to him and says, I don't know how you won this, but you did, because there was a lot of stiff competition. But he gave him $100 in brand $20 bills, and he took that money and went out to Decca Records, back when Decca was actually not just formed, and he was actually the first signed artist by Decca, and he cut a couple albums or a couple songs, and just it moved out to L.A. and just progress from there.
Wow. And he went to a series of radio shows at pretty good number one for a couple of decades, several decades, I think from 1931 to 1952. Can you tell us about some of those other radio shows that he did?
Yeah, he was first on the Beverly Hillbillies as Donner Dave and decided to start his own show. So the first one was called the Stuart Hamblin's Family Album. Actually, Patsy Montana came out of that little show. She was obviously back then not quite Patsy Montana. She was obviously, I'm looking for her name. Was it Ruby?
Ruby Blevins.
There we go.
Ruby Blevins.
Yeah. She actually got her name from my grandfather. He had a guest on his show, Monty Montana. And Monty came on and he announced, Monty, that his niece was here to visit as well. And it was Patsy Montana. And so obviously it was Ruby, and the name stuck, and she kept that for the rest of, obviously, everything that's going on for show business. So that was one of his first shows. And then he also started the Covered Wagon Jubilee, Stuart Hamlin and the Covered Wagon Jubilee, which was his morning show. And shortly thereafter, he also started the Stuart Hamlin and his Lucky Stars. And that became the big show that everybody loved and everybody wanted to see. A lot of the same guys were in the Covered Wagon that were in the Lucky Stars. So it didn't change the group. A couple of people may have been working in the morning and not in the evening, but pretty much it was the same group of guys. But Stuart Hamlin and his Lucky Stars was the big show that everybody wanted to get in and take a look at and watch, because he would do things that nobody else would do. He'd do things like ride his horse onto stage and rear up. And he would do things that, And he would do things that just were a little bit different than the norm, and he'd have a good time doing it. So, yeah, those are the basic shows. And then, obviously, the Cowboy Church of the Air actually started, and that's a funny story by itself. And it was actually before he was even saved. So I'll tell it real quick. They basically, he was on 7 days a week on the radio for 3 hours every day. And between the morning, he had a mid-time little half-hour show that he would just MC himself, and then he had his Stuart Hamlin and his Lucky Stars in the evening. And then Saturday they had a barn dance out in Long Beach, and they broadcast that live. And so Sunday morning show, when it came up, the boys were out a little too long and partied a little too hardy, and the end result was Sunday morning came around this one Sunday, and Stuart was the only one there. And he had a 13-member band, so he was the only one that showed up for the Sunday morning show. And so he grabbed the mic and said, you know what, folks, we're changing the name of the show today. Sunday morning show is now called the Cowboy Church of the Air. We're going to talk about the ills of alcohol. And the end result was the newsletters flooded in. The letters just came pouring in. And he said, well, I guess we're going to name that show the Cowboy Church of the Air. And that's what they did that's when it started. And I want to say that was 1937, I believe, is when it started.
Wow. So, now, I have to ask you real quickly, which show was Wes Tuttle on? The Tuttles are very precious friends of ours. And, of course, Wes has already gone on to be with the Lord, but Marilyn is still with us. So, and I know he worked with your grandfather when he was pretty young. Which show was that? Do you remember?
Well, he was actually on the Lucky Stars, Stuart Hamlin was Lucky Stars. So, and I probably should have shot you a couple of pictures of that too, because I got some good ones in Wes and my grandfather together, part of the group.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, he was on Stuart Hamlin's Lucky Stars, and it was just one of those things where he just fit in perfectly. And of course, they had a fun time with Wesley. So.
Yes, I imagine. Oh, my gosh. Well, let's listen to another one. And actually, this is one of my cuts of one of your grandpa's songs. Until Then, I know that you like the way I do it, and I'm really very grateful for that. So I thought we'd kind of – he has been recorded by zillions of other artists, and so here's one of my recordings of one of your granddad's songs, Until Then.
A heart
is but a stepping stone along the trail that's winding ever upward, this troubled world is not mine. But until then, my heart will go on singing. Until then, with joy, I'll carry on.
That's on your latest, not your latest album, but Granite Mountain, which is just an amazing, amazing album.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. It's been doing well for us, so I'm pretty pleased about that. You know what really is cool about that song is that, I mean, he wrote that in 1958, I believe, and how relevant it still is. You know,
today.
Maybe even more so today than it was in 1956. I love performing that song, and I love how relevant it is. And your granddad was something else. I'm going to switch gears here. I really would love for you to share the story about how your grandfather got your grandmother to go out with him for the first time.
Oh.
Because the story I heard was that she was working either at the radio studio or someplace, and he was enamored with her, and she wouldn't have anything to do with him. And so he was, and this was before he was saved, and that was another thing that she wasn't real pleased about. Kind of this radio personality guy. So please share the story, because I think it's hilarious. I just love it.
Well, the funny thing is he was there, and of course he had his group, and because he was the head of the group, he would, you know, always go in and pick up the check. And this was actually during the Depression, so it was real hard for people to get money. People were, scraping up money left and right, trying to get some. And here he'd walk into the studio, and he saw her, and he wanted to impress her. So he walked in and asked for his $1,200 check. Now, $1,200 back then was a lot of money. But what he didn't say was that it was also, he was splitting that $1,200 with the entire group, the entire band. So his check wasn't really that much. But he wanted to try to impress her, and she knew what was going on. And she would just always, he'd ask her out, and she'd just say no. No. Well, one time he walked in, and he had a hound dog with him. And she looked at me, she says, "Do you hunt?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah, I hunt." And she goes, "Well, I'd like to go hunting sometime." And he seized on the opportunity. He's like, "Well, how about we go hunting tonight?" She goes, "Well, I don't have any hunting clothes with me." And he looks at her and he says, "Well, you're about a size 5. And she goes, "How do you know that?" And he goes, "Well, I've been sizing you up for a while." And he says, "Don't worry, I got you covered. We'll take care of everything." So he goes back to the group and he says, "You guys, we're all going hunting tonight. I don't care who." She said she didn't want to go alone with him. He says, "Well, no, I always go with the guys, all the guys." And she said, "And do their wives go?" And he said, "Yes, they do." And he said, "Well, then I'll go." And so he went back to the group, and he said, "Look, guys, you are all going hunting tonight. I don't care what you thought you were doing. You're now all going hunting, and you have to have a woman in tow. I don't care if it's your wife, it's your girlfriend, you're bringing somebody along." And the guys, because it was during the Depression, he said to them, "If you don't show up with a girl in tow, don't bother coming back to the studio tomorrow because you're done." And all the guys knew that was a serious threat, because during the Depression – The band members were lined up out the door waiting to try to get an opportunity to sing on or to play on Stewart's show, because his show is one of the main actually was the number one show of the radio at that time. So they all went hunting. And he brought over the sponsor for the radio show was the Star Outfitting. So he went in clothes. He could do that for her, gave it to her. And they all went out that evening hunting. And they went raccoon hunting, and it was really, they were down by the San Ynez River, and they were hunting, and one by one, the guys dropped off and went back to the car and their cars and took off. So the group kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller until it was just Stewart and Susie. And they were hunting, and they thought they were treating a raccoon, but it turned out to be somebody's farm, and so the farmer walked out and shot a shotgun in the air to try to chase whoever away. And they went running. Back then, the San Ynez had a little, not a dam, but kind of a breakwater thing. And she says they were hopping from post to post to get across it. And she realized then that she would never had so much fun in her life than with this man right now. And she knew then that this was the guy she was going to marry. So that's kind of how it all started. And the funny thing is, when they went on their honeymoon, they actually went into Arizona and rounded up heads of horses. That's what they did for their honeymoon.
Wow. They were really just perfect for each other, weren't they? That is so – and her name wasn't Susie.
No, it was Viva Daniels. So because they started dating, one of the guys, Dave Ashenfeller, was one of the guys on the show, and Dave – she always would stand off to the side. She'd always stand off stage, just off to the side, and while he's doing his radio show. Well, he thought he'd have a little fun one of the times, and he looked at Dave. Dave Ashenfeller was sitting back there playing, and he said, "Hey, Dave, you know your sister's here today. We're gonna have her. We're gonna pull her out and get her to on the mic." And of course, nobody knew anything. He would do this. His shows were never scripted. Do this. He just off the cuff pull up stuff, and kind of like we do with Patsy Montana. So he goes, "Yeah, we've got your sister here, Dave. Susie Ashenfeller, get out here. Come on." And of course, everybody's looking around trying to figure out who Susie was. My grandmother's looking around trying to figure out who's the guest artist that he's talking about. And he runs over and grabs her hand and pulls her out on stage. And of course, she was a little shocked, but what he didn't know was that she does sing. And he didn't know that at that early stage in their dating. And so he said, "Well, Susie, why don't you sing us a song?" And so she was kind of a little on the shock side, but she turned around to the group, the guys, and she said, "You guys know this song?" And they said, "Oh, yeah, we know it." And so she said, "Well, start playing." And so they started playing, and she sang right in, and just at that moment became part of Stuart Hamlin as Lucky Stars as Susie Ashenfeller. And so Susie kind of stuck. Actually, he called her My Susie on the radio pretty soon thereafter, and so that everybody knew that it was his Susie and not somebody else's Susie. And so she became known on the radio as My Susie. And Susie stuck, and Susie became her name. So that's how all that changed.
Well, I didn't even realize any of this stuff that Susie wasn't her name. And what a delight your grandmother was. I had the good fortune to sing at her 101st birthday party. So it was just such a sell. And what a great story. Actually, more about the story than I thought.
Oh,
my gosh. Well, and your grandfather, the achievements that he had. I mean, we can't go into all of them, but basically everything from getting a walk of star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame to running for president. I mean, really? And everything in between. He just had an amazing, colorful life. Oh, my gosh. And one of the things I loved, you sent me a CD that has your grandfather's songs, many of your grandfather's songs. And I'm thinking clips from maybe the radio show or something that actually has him setting up these songs. And we have a couple of them on the show today. And the first one that we have is It Is No Secret, What God Can Do. And I don't know if people realize that, you know, your grandfather wrote that song, but I mean, that is just an incredible song. And he talks about it, and he talks about, we went to my neighbor's for a party. The neighbor was, tell us who?
It was John Wayne. And actually, I did a little research on that.
John Wayne.
Yeah. It was an after movie party at John Wayne's house, and John was great friends with my grandfather. And it was right after he filmed Sands of Iwo Jima. I found that out as well. So that's the premise behind it. So he says in the story that he's about to tell, he says Hollywood personality, but realize that is John Wayne. That is John Wayne.
John Wayne. So we're going to listen to the story of how It Is No Secret came to be written, and then listen to your grandpa's version of It Is No Secret.
Many people have often asked me, how do you feel, Mr. Hamlin, when you hear It Is No Secret being sung by a choir? I've never been able to tell them because there's no word to explain it. Oh, to be sure, I wrote the song, but I cannot seem to ever find myself claiming sole ownership to a song that, to date, has been translated into over 50 foreign languages. A little old lady one time put it this way. She said, "Mr. Hamlin, you didn't write that song. You just got to hold the pen." I think she was right. I wrote the song one night shortly after midnight, and believe it or not, the song in its entirety, lyrics and music, was written in the short space of only 17 minutes. It came about this way. I'd been visiting a neighbor of ours, a man who at that time was one of Hollywood's most famous actors, and he'd just returned from making a picture, and I'd gone over to his home just to kind of fill him in on what had happened in his absence. There were a lot of other people there, too, and somehow the discussion got around to how people could solve problems within themselves. And I remember making the statement about it's no secret what God can do in a man's life. About 2 hours later, I started to leave and was just walking out the door when this man made a remark that I'll never forget. He said, "Stuart, you ought to write a song about it is no secret what God can do." Man, that's a beautiful thought. Well, I was thinking about it as I walked across the lawn over to our home, and when I walked in the bedroom, I saw my wife rolling her hair up in curlers, like all women do, I guess. So I figured, well, I got about 45 minutes to kill before bedtime, so I just walked back into the living room and sat down at the organ. About this time, our big old hall clock started striking the hour of midnight, and I got an idea and just grabbed a pencil and started writing lyrics. The chimes of time ring out the news, another day is through. Someone slipped and fell. Was that someone you? You may have longed for added strength, your courage to renew. Do not be disheartened, for I have news for you. It is no secret what God can do. Well, when I'd finished the song, I remember exactly what went through my mind as I sat there and reread those lyrics in the music. It was, without a doubt, the most simple song that I'd ever written. I thought about calling my wife in to see how she liked the new song, and thinking it surely must be 3 o'clock or later, I just turned and glanced at the hall clock. It was just 17 minutes past 12, and I couldn't believe it. I've never been able to compose any musical composition under 3 or 4 hours. But that night, as I looked at that clock, I thought it stopped, but I could see that big old pendulum still swinging. My wife came in, sat down, and began playing the melody, and after she'd played it a couple of times, I was surprised to see tears welling up in her eyes. "What's the matter, baby?" I said to her. "That's the simplest, most ordinary song I've ever written. Why should it make you sad?" Women amaze me. When they're happy, they cry. When they're sad, they cry. You can just never tell, can you? Tears can never be a barometer to what's going on in a woman's heart. "I'm not sad," she said, looking at me through those tears. "I'm happy. This is not an ordinary song. It's the most beautiful thing you've ever written. It tells a wonderful story, so simple and so beautifully told, that all people all over the world can surely know. No secret what God can do in their lives." Yeah, I'll remember that night. I'll always remember that night. I remember, too, the great thrill I got when Billy Graham asked me to come to New York to sing that song at Madison Square Garden. That night, the place was packed out. The choir had over 3,000 voices in it. Cliff Barrows was the director. And when Billy introduced me and I stood up to sing, there in the glare of those brilliant floodlights, that strange feeling that I always get seemed to just overwhelm me when that huge choir rose and their voices began to ring, singing that song, written one night because of what a neighbor had said. Because a big old hall clock began striking the hour of midnight.
Someone slipped and fell. Was
that someone you may have longed for, added strength, your courage to renew. Do not be disheartened, for I have news for you. It is no secret what God can do, what He can for others, He'll do for you. With arms wide open, He'll pardon you. What God can do.
Oh, my goodness, you have to be so proud of that song for your grandfather. Wow.
Yeah, that is amazing song. Amazing song. Yeah.
It is.
So, but you know, it's funny because he wasn't always a Christian, and it's amazing what he wrote both before and after, especially in the after standpoint. I mean, the songs that he actually wrote were just, I mean, the list is just unbelievable. I mean, He Bought My Soul at Calvary. Obviously, It Is No Secret What God Can Do. Until Then, Teach Me, Lord, to Wait. Obviously, we've heard Open Up Your Heart, Let Sunshine In. This Old House, How Big Is God? I mean, they're just powerful, powerful songs that he wrote.
They do. They just go on and on. And the thing you bring up about his conversion, and his conversion was, I mean, talk about an amazing story just in his conversion, but then that the fallout from that, or the ripple effect of that. And because you mentioned going singing for Billy Graham at Madison Square Garden, and they were super connected. And you want to tell us about your grandfather's conversion and just how that whole Billy Graham connection took off.
Yeah. Yeah. Billy actually did his eulogy as well. So Billy did the, when my parents rededicated their lives at their 50th anniversary, Billy came and performed the ceremony. And then he also did the eulogy at his funeral. But yeah, the way that all started, boy, let me tell you, Stewart was well known in Los Angeles. Obviously, as we discussed, number one radio show on the West Coast, was well known for, shall we say, drunken disorder, barroom fights, jail time. A lot of stories in the Los Angeles, or back then the Examiner's pages, of just times Stewart spent in jail. So for all sorts of things. So he was well known in Los Angeles for just being a little on the rowdy side. And my grandmother was most of her life saved. So she always was trying to figure out how to reach Stewart. And the funny thing is his father, my great-grandfather, founded the Evangelical Methodist Church. So he was raised all his life by a pastor. He knew what he was supposed to be doing, or where, you know, what he was really all about. And the funny thing is he actually it started off with my grandmother hearing Billy Graham speak at Forest Home Event. And it was a little camp, Christian camp. And she had heard him speak and said, boy, if anybody could reach Stewart, it would be Billy. Well, she found out Billy was coming to the Los Angeles area to speak at a little Bible study held by a woman by the name of Henrietta Mears. And Henrietta Mears had this Bible study out of Hollywood Presbyterian Church. And it was a lot of the Hollywood personalities that would come to this particular Bible study. And so what happened was is she was having this Bible study. Billy was going to speak, and she purposely came downstairs dressed to the nines. She was dressed fully, and Stuart looked at her and said, well, where are you going? And she said, well, to the Bible study. Stuart, please come with me. Please come with me. No. You go ahead. Stuart, you don't understand. These people think I'm single. You never show up. So please, just one time, take me. She really goaded him into going. And so he did. He agreed to take her. Well, what he didn't know was they got there early. So when they got there, it was just Billy was already there. Henrietta was there. And that was it. So Susie and Henrietta disappeared into the kitchen and left Billy and Stuart alone. Well, they hit it off. I mean, they became instant friends. And they were chatting, having a great time. And Billy said, you know, or Stuart said to Billy, he says, well, when you want to do this 10 crusade thing, you let me know and we'll promote it on the radio show. And about, you know, people started to come in, arrive, and so that was all good. Well, because my grandfather grew up the son of a preacher, the story in the Bible that just irritated him just unbelievably was the rich young ruler. So what does Billy talk about that night? The rich young ruler. And, of course, because a lot of his cohorts were there in the room, he couldn't get up and leave. Normally he would just get up and leave, but he couldn't leave. When they got in the car that night, my grandmother said she didn't even want to look at him. And he was just, he was mad. He was steaming. And he's like, you did that on purpose. He's like, no, Stuart. I had no idea what he was going to talk about. Well, when Billy calls, I'm not taking that call. And I'm not putting him on the radio show. And I'm not, have him stay at our house. I'm not doing that. Well, luckily, time kind of makes things, you know, people forget things. And 2 weeks later, Billy calls the house. And Susie picks up and she goes, uh-oh. She goes, hey, Stuart, Billy's on the phone. And he goes, Billy! And he grabs the phone and starts talking, and he'd forgotten that whole little incident, so which was good.
Wow.
So he went in and started promoting the radio show on his radio show, or he started promoting Billy's Tent Crusade on the radio show. And they'd get, you know, decent several hundred people would show up at the Tent Crusade every night. And it was every night. They had this Tent Crusade every single night. And, you know, several hundred people would show up, but it was not packing the place out. It wasn't crazy. It wasn't what we normally understand to be a Billy Graham crusade. So it was just, you know, several hundred people. And the funny thing was the first night they had the Tent Crusade, my grandmother comes down again, dressed all the way to the hilt. And he's like, where are you going? And she goes, well, to the Tent Crusade. He said, well, you go on. He goes, no, Stuart, you don't understand. On your radio show, when you talk about it with Billy, you tell everybody to be there because you'll be there too. And he did. He said that. He says, make sure you're there because I'm there too. And so he was a man of his word. So, of course, he got dressed and they both went. And he'd sit front row center. And every time they'd pass a bucket by, he'd take out a $5 bill and make sure the whole crowd saw him put that $5 bill in that bucket. I mean, it was almost like a show unto itself for that $5 bill to go inside. And they'd pass it around, and they did this every single night. So every single night they did this. But again, the crowds were not great. They were okay. They weren't packing the place out. So what happened was as this progressed time and time, it came to the point where it was not financially feasible to keep doing the tent. And they had a little prayer tent just off to the side of the main tent, and all the leadership was in there meeting. And they were talking, and what they didn't know was Stuart was walking by the outside of the tent. He was just happened to be walking by, and he heard Billy's voice. And Billy said, you know, we must keep this going. There's one man we need to convert. This one man is going to change everything. We need to get him to accept Jesus Christ. And Stuart knew in an instant Billy was talking about him and made him madder than anything. And he, matter of fact, stormed out of that meeting that night. Or left, didn't even go to the Tent Crusade. And they said that Tent Crusade was ending, right, that weekend. So he said, well, I'm going hunting. He wouldn't go to Tent Crusade, so he went hunting. Well, what he didn't know was the rest of that meeting, that little tent there, was they wanted to extend it 2 weeks. And so when he came back from hunting, he laid in bed, and my grandmother said, well, Stuart, they extended it 2 more weeks. And he's like, oh, no. He couldn't believe it. He thought he made it past the whole thing. So the end result was one night, shortly thereafter, he came and sat down, and he was just mad, madder than could be. And instead of a $5 bill, he had a 50-cent piece, and he just flipped it up in the air and caught it. And he's doing this right in front of Billy, standing on stage speaking. He's just flipping the 50-cent up in the air and catching it. And Billy and them, they were all dying laughing because they knew he was under such conviction. My grandmother was about ready to crawl into a hole because he is just, you know, making a scene in the front row there. They pass the bucket. He takes the 50 cent and he throws it in there. And then he passes the bucket to her. And she said she didn't even get it out of her hands. And he reached across her and he said, "I'm not even giving him that." Pulled the 50 cent piece back out. So it was like, oh.
Oh, my gosh.
So he said, "You go on home. I'm going to the bars." He said, and she says, "Oh, Stuart, don't do that." And he goes, "You go on home." He gave her the keys and he went to the bars. And he said it was the worst night ever. The music was terrible. It was raining outside. He switched to a different bar. He says it didn't matter how much he drank. It didn't. It was like everything was watered down. Nothing affected him. Nothing. It was just terrible, terrible, terrible. And he said it just was the worst night ever he'd been out there. So he got home about 3 o'clock in the morning, and he took off a boot and threw it against the wall. And he took off the other boot and threw it against the wall. And, of course, my grandmother didn't want to move. She was just quietly laying there. And he laid down, and after a few minutes, he said, "Baby, you awake?" And she says, "Yeah, I'm awake." He says, "All my life I've known what I was supposed to have been doing, we're, you know, listening to my dad. And all my life I fought against it because I didn't want what life I grew up in to be for you and the girls." And she said, "Well, it didn't matter to us. It wouldn't matter to anything." And he said, "Billy did this to me. I'm calling him up." She says, "You can't call him up, Stuart. It's 3:30 in the morning." He says, "I don't care." So he calls up Billy on the phone. And, of course, Billy answers. And he says, "Billy, I want you to fix this. I want you, you know, I want to accept Christ." He goes, "Well, Stuart, I'm not doing this over the phone." He says, "I'm not going to do that." He said he never wanted to hit somebody so bad across the phone line that moment than that very minute when Billy said he wasn't going to help him. He said, Billy said, "If you want to do this, you got to come down and see me face to face." My grandmother said they never got dressed so fast in their lives. They went, drove down there. Of course, the rest is history. He became saved, accepted Christ right there in Billy's apartment. And that day on the shows, he got on the radio and said, "You guys all come tonight because you're going to hear a new man. Somebody new is going to speak to you, and that new man is me, and I've accepted Christ, and you can hear all about it on the radio." Well, here's this rebel rouser that tears up Los Angeles, saying that he's accepted Christ and changing his life. Everybody and their brother wanted to come down and hear what's going on. Of course, that was the night Hearst sent all his photographers down to take pictures of what was happening at the Tent Crusade in Los Angeles. And here there's overflow crowds, there's people outside, it's jam-packed. The papers reported that Stuart, you know, that what happened, the cowboy singer Stuart Hamblin hits the Sawdust Trail. That was the front page of the Los Angeles Examiner, and that's the paper that launched Billy's career. And that night forward, the tents were packed out because everybody wanted to come see what was happening in the Tent Crusade.
Wow. Lifelong friends, it sounds like, too.
Yeah. So it was really great. And, of course, you know, he wrote the great songs. I mean, things like even This Old House came out of that. And that was originally written as a gospel. That's, you know, a lot of people don't realize that. And it was originally written as a gospel. And just a funny story.
Oh, wow.
I got a second to tell you about that. He wrote it, This Old House, and are we going to hear it?
Yes. In fact, I think we're going to skip and go right to the story of This Old House and go to This
okay.
Old House. So, but go ahead and set this up a little bit, and we'll just go right to that.
He wrote the song, and he thought it was worth a lot of money and wanted to sell it, and took it to all the studios and the record labels and wanted to sell it for $10,000, and nobody wanted to take him up on the story of This Old House. Or the song of This Old House. And so he actually in 1954 formed the Hamblin Music Company, which now I'm the president and CEO of, and became the obviously published This Old House. And it was just kind of amazing that nobody wanted to publish it, and here it becomes the number one song in 1954 in 7 different countries at the same time. And I'll let him tell the whole story because it's quite amazing.
Wow. Let's go ahead and hear that story and the song This Old House by Stuart Hamblin.
Some years back when I was on a hunting trip way up in the high Sierra mountain range, I had a rather strange thing happen to me. It was a cold, and I do mean a cold day. I'd ridden my horse up over a big ridge, and was letting him blow a bit, and I happened to look away off down in a wild, desolate-looking valley, and I could see an old log cabin. Well, I was about in the mood to freeload somebody off a cup of coffee, so I rode my horse down toward the place. But when I rode up, I was rather disappointed because it looked like there was nobody living there. I could see the front door had been blown down, kind of like it had been wrestling with a storm. In fact, it was a lonely-looking place. I was just about to ride on when I got a big surprise. An old hound dog came staggering out of that old cabin and just real wearily like lay down on the porch. Now, I know a dog will not long remain at a deserted place, but if his master is in that place, he'll stay there till he starves to death, and this dog looked like he wasn't far from doing that. Because that old dog was there, and because there was no smoke coming out of that chimney, that place might have looked deserted, but I knew it wasn't. This dog was telling me a story, and I thought to myself, there's something wrong here. The thought hit me with a foreboding premonition. There was a man there somewhere. I swung down off my horse, walked up to the porch, and that old dog wearily got up and started slowly back into the house, same as to say, come on. I'll lead you to him. I stepped over the old door that was caved in. It was dark in the old house, and I couldn't see anybody about. I saw the old dog standing over by another door. I walked over and opened it, and I saw him, a little old man on a couch. As I walked up closer, I could see that he had snow on his chest. Snow that had sifted in through a broken window pane above him. I don't know how long the old man had been dead. He just looked like he was asleep. His old dog came up and began to whine. Now and then he'd look up to me with a pleading look, same as say, can't you do something to help him? Then I happened to notice shabby window curtains that would sway back and forth every time the wind came through that broken window. A man's not going to put up window curtains in a cabin that's at least 20 miles from the nearest road. A man won't do that. A woman had hung up those curtains. I began to wonder what had happened to her. I turned and walked back out into the yard and sat down on a fallen tree. I noticed there wasn't any snow on that tree. Perhaps a storm had recently visited the mountains and blown it over. As I looked around, I could see a little toy wagon way up under the porch. A wagon that only had three wheels. And I wondered, where were the children that once played with that broken wagon? I can't explain it, but I reached in my coat pocket and got a little paper sack out. And I thought I'd like to paint a word picture of that place. I began the lyrics with, this old house once knew my children. This old house once knew my wife. Well, you know the rest of the story. This old house was a song hit of seven different countries at the same time. But I don't think that anyone ever got the true meaning that I intended the song to convey. You see, I wrote it to be a sad song. And when I made the first recording, I did it that way. But then the recording industry said, oh, Stuart, you're all wrong. To be a hit, it's got to have a real bounce to it. Well, not long ago, I was up in our attic and happened to run across that first old tape recording that I'd made. Perhaps if you listen to it, you can get the true meaning that I wanted the song to have. You see, most people thought the song was just about a poor, lonely prospector and his half-dead dog that had cashed in their blue chips way up high in the Sierra Mountains during a wild storm. But that wasn't it at all. The song was about two houses. The house that's made of mud, brick, and wood, and stone that a man builds. And the other house, the mortal house. The house that the maker of men has loaned to the man for such a short, short time.
Ain't I gonna need this house no longer? I'm getting ready to meet the spirit.
This old house once knew my children. This old house once knew my wife. This old house was home and comfort as we fought the storms of life. This old house once rang with laughter. This old house heard many a shout. Now she trembles in the darkness when the lightning walks about. But ain't gonna need this house no longer. Ain't gonna need this house no more. Ain't got time to fix the shingles. Ain't got time to fix the floor. Ain't got time to oil the hinges or to mend the window pane. Ain't gonna need this house no longer. I'm a-getting ready to meet the saints. This old house is a-getting shaky. This old house, it's getting old. This old house lets in the rain. This old house lets in the cold. On my knees I'm getting chilly, but I feel no fear nor pain. 'Cause I see an angel peeking through a broken window pane. But ain't gonna need this house no longer. Ain't gonna need this house no more. Ain't got time to fix the shingles. Ain't got time to fix the floor. Ain't got time to oil the hinges or to mend the window pane. Ain't gonna need this house no longer. I'm getting ready to meet the saints. My old hound dog lies asleep. He don't know I'm gonna leave. Else he'd wake up by the fireplace. He'd just sit there and howl and grieve. But my hunting days are over. We ain't going hunting anymore. Gabriel done brought in my chariot when the wind blew down the door. But I ain't gonna need this house no longer. Ain't gonna need this old house no more. Ain't got time to fix the shingles. Ain't got time to fix the floor. Ain't got time to oil the hinges or to mend the window pane. Ain't gonna need this house no longer. I'm getting ready to meet the saints.
Oh, what a wonderful song. I've heard a lot of artists sing it at different events I've been to, but partners sing it. And this, wow. Bill, it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show today with all these stories. And I know there's a zillion more, so we definitely have to get you back on the show so we can hear more about your grandfather. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Belinda. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And, yeah, there's a lot more stories.
Lot more stories. Well, I'm sure that people are going to want to get a hold of some of the CDs that you have of your music, especially if they spend any time driving around, you know, in RVs or any road time at all. That one that with the stories and the songs through it is just such a delight to listen to. And so, where can they get a hold of you, and how do they get their hands on this music, Bill?
That one you're describing is Birth of a Song, and that's actually my favorite CD that I put together. I produced it his. And, yeah, all of our music, all of his music is available at our website, which is hamblinmusic.com, which is H-A-M-B-L-E-N music.com. Also available on iTunes and all the e-stores or the electronic stores. We have all of his music up there as well. I should say this, not all of it. I've actually got 4 done. I've got 8 more CDs still to go of his music and 3 more planned of the stories and songs together as well. But, yeah, our website is where you can see most of the information.
Well, wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being with us again today and for sharing your grandfather with us. And we look forward to having you back on the show, Bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Belinda, and thanks again for having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
And for sure, before I let Bill go, I do want to quote a quote from her. About Stuart Hamblers. That's another whole thing we need to get into. We're good friends with the Hamblins. Bill Gaither said, in any field, there are few originals. Slim was a true original. Sam, his life, we're like no other. As far as Gloria and I are concerned, he was one of the great, great gospel songwriters of the last century. Such a wonderful man, and so happy that Bill is keeping this music alive and out there for everyone. I want to go ahead and close with this scripture. And I know as a performing artist, you have a lot of ups and downs in your life, a lot of disappointments, and a lot of times, no matter how successful you are, when you feel pretty small and pretty insignificant. And I think that's what this is about, this scripture. And it's in 2 Corinthians 12:9-10. But he said to me, and this is Paul talking, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And Paul says, therefore, I will all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why for Christ's sake, I delight in weakness, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. And that's just the strength that when we are weak, when we are feeling like we can't do it, when that is when we open the door for the Lord to just move through us and do incredible things, as is evidenced by Stuart Hamblin. To encourage you that when you're feeling weak and you're feeling down and you're feeling bombarded, just to reach out to the Lord and know that when you are weak, then you are truly, that is when you have the most strength, because your strength then comes entirely from the Lord. Thank you so much for joining us, and we're going to leave you with another Stuart Hamblin song we're reminiscing of, and we'll see you next week.
My poor mind cannot grasp their array. But the hand that placed them there, far across the wide heaven, had a plan when he placed them that way. Known only to him are the great hidden secrets. I'll fear not the darkness when my flame shall dim. I know not what the future holds, but I know who holds the future. It's a secret known only. Thank you. far more than my share. Known only to Him are the great hidden secrets. I'll fear not.